I've never been more prepared for a podcast than this one right here.
This podcast that you came up with the idea for in June of this year. We're recording this on December 21st, the last day of the universe.
Yeah, I guess. It was a throwaway statement I made to you, Ryan, that we should rank dungeons after we talk about all the dungeons in this game.
And specifically after we talk about Stone Tower Temple, it seemed like that was what made you want to do top 10 dungeons.
Yeah.
Am I right about that?
Okay. What made me come up with the idea, because I like that dungeon. So I was like, well, I want to
talk more about Stone Tower Temple. You can't help but think, is this better or worse than all other dungeons?
Exactly. So we're going to do that. We're going to rank top 10 dungeons. I need to ask a question first, though. Sarah.
Yes.
I don't know what Zelda games you've played. I have a really good idea of all the stuff that Ryan's played, but I don't know your background that well.
Yeah. I intentionally didn't mention the games I haven't played because it's so embarrassing.
No, it's fine. Don't be embarrassed by anything.
Well, I haven't played Skyward Sword. That's one that I really wish I had played for this
podcast. You're fine. You're fine.
Okay. And I haven't played Breath of the Wild.
Oh, okay.
That is embarrassing.
I know, right? I can
see why you wouldn't tell anybody
that. It's on my list.
If you want, we can cut that out.
That's okay. I gotta represent people who haven't played it.
Yeah, that's valid.
And intend to someday.
There's a lot of video games.
Yeah, so true. I think there's one more. A Link Between Worlds.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
And other than that, I think I've played most of them.
Oh, okay. You're very well played
then. Including, like, the Oracles?
I played Oracle of Seasons, I think.
Oh, that's right. You said that on a previous episode.
Yeah, you're very well played in the series.
Yes.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Nothing to worry about, but you are missing out on the very good podcast about... Or did you listen to the Breath of the Wild podcast and just not understand it?
No, I listened to some of the side episodes because I knew that I wouldn't need
too much background. Hey, that's a very good approach.
Yeah. Yeah. Someday I'll get to that too after I understand the game.
At least one person, J-Mac, was listening to the Link's Awakening podcast not having played that game, which I think must have been a really fun experience.
That must have been especially weird because it's all out of order.
Yeah.
Yes.
And some episodes are very short. So I guess it's a very low commitment, right?
Yeah.
That's true.
It's not like you're dedicating, like...
Okay, guys. Okay. We have to do the top 10 dungeons.
We have to do top 10 dungeons. Do we want to talk just real quick about our individual methodologies of selecting?
Oh, yeah. Definitely draw this out for as long as possible.
I'm excited about this topic.
Me too. Me too. I want this to be a 6-hour episode. So I know that I got the Dragonfly something. What is that website called? This website that's set up, dragonflycave.com.
Oh, right. You told me this.
Has this thing, dragonflycave.com/favorite.html. That's the complete URL. For this thing that someone set up for picking your favorite Pokemon, where it shows you a bunch of Pokemon and it says click on the ones you like, and then, you know, it kind of eliminates or like soft eliminates the other ones, and you go through all 6,000 Pokemon and then you find out what your favorites are just because you clicked on them instead of the others. And they made the mechanics, the bones, available for you to set up your own website or just on your own machine set up a favorite picker of something else. So when I got my favorite, like, I don't know, 20 dungeons narrowed down, I said, well, here's how I'm gonna find out what their order is. I'm gonna click on them.
That's really smart.
And then 6 months later I tried it again.
Oh.
And yeah, because I wanted to make sure my results were accurate. And they ended up, I had the same top 10, and like the top 5 were all the, like, within a group, just, you know, mingling within that group. And the bottom 5 of the top 10 were also all in that same area, but the so the standings hadn't changed by very much. I'm not sure. I think I'm using the original order here, though.
Okay, probably. Okay.
What was your methodology, Zach?
So I, 6 months ago, went through, like, every single... I went through Zelda Wiki and just went through every single, like, Zelda game's dungeons and just grabbed the ones that I thought were contenders and put them in a text document. And then I took a, I guess functionally the same approach, but without a app, without a program. And I just did the, like, put them in a vague order and then started to scrutinize, does this dungeon beat the dungeon on top above it? And then I'd move it up if it did. And then does that dungeon beat the dungeon above
it?
Oh, and
that's cool.
I did the giant bomb game of the year argument method of, like, just, like, having a physical list you're looking at and trying to get stuff up as high as it'll go and then see if anything else can get past that and shuffle stuff around that way. So I'd, like, a physical, like, top 10 that I would move things up and down.
That's kind of what I did, too.
And yeah. I actually have a top 15... But I'm not going to go through the bottom five. Those are in the no-hopers land.
I have a list of honorable mentions as well that we might have to refer to.
I also have... Oh, well, we'll get to it. Up. Yeah.
I have an honorable mention, too.
Wonderful.
I have a number zero, too.
I really want to find out if we have honorable mentions in common.
Probably.
I have a number zero, too.
I also... Okay, we both have number zeros.
Wait,
this is good.
What?
A number zero. Obviously.
I don't know what that means.
I don't know either, but
don't
I'm
worry
curious
about it.
If we
we'll get to that
mean
at the end.
Same thing.
Now we have to draw... No, we didn't, probably, but we have to draw this out now and not tell Ryan what it is.
We talked right. about this beforehand, so... No, we did not talk about this beforehand.
All right. I think that's it. I think that's all the preamble. We should probably get into it now, right?
Okay. So, let's start with... the 10th place.
Hello, podcast, my old friend. Welcome to dungeon number 10.
Oh, so you weren't kidding about the jingle thing.
Wow.
Okay, Sarah, you go first.
Okay. Wow, that was quite an intro. My... top 10, my number 10 is Catfish's Maw from Link's Awakening.
Okay.
This is a
okay.
very good dungeon. So, number 10 feels a bit rude, but it is basically because this is a fish that you go inside of, which is very cool. I guess it's probably not an actual fish, but it sure looks like one from the outside. And the fact that you don't really know it's there before you have to go in it is very cool. It's suddenly there's like this big weird dungeon that's shaped like a fish. That's awesome. And then the like dungeon vibe is very cool on the inside as well. It's a water dungeon, which is cool. And it feels watery. There's like water and aren't there like weird plants and stuff? I don't know. It feels like the bottom of a lake or something. It's cool. There's really good
yeah.
music.
Bottom of the lake is a really good way to put it.
Yeah. Yeah, I love the music in it. And there's a ton of cool... let's see. Oh, well, of course, the mini boss fights with Master Zalphos.
Yes.
Very memorable. Yeah, I think it's very solid.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I have
it's
to agree.
It's a really good one. It's one that, like, Ryan would, like, reference now and again, just in, like, normal conversation.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Like, as a metaphor or something, or why? Uh-huh. That's a real Catfish's Maw.
It's one that's stuck in my head. Also, it has the best name.
Yeah, it could have been, like...
So many
catfish.
Like Zelda dungeons
anything,
are just
really.
Like confer to a style, especially in the older days where it's like everything in here is labyrinth, everything in here is a palace, everything here is a yeah. And
palace.
This could be Catfish's Palace.
Eastern Catfish Palace. What a cool dungeon name.
No, they tried to make each dungeon have a unique evocative name.
Catfish Temple.
That's why Link's Awakening is really good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, were you in the... Yeah, you were in the middle, and then
is
I
Is it my turn?
Yes.
My number 10 is the Temple of Brainstorms from Cadence of Hyrule, where it's in the DLC... I think it's just a DLC dungeon, but you go in there, and some robot voice takes all your stuff, and you have to collect all your equipment again through this dungeon, and it's a randomized dungeon. Cadence of Hyrule, I realized, is basically like a rhythm version of just the Link to the Past randomizer. It really is just trying to be that, the Link to the Past randomizer. But then the Temple of Brainstorms is kind of a randomizer within a randomizer. Also, the boss is Synthrova, who is Komen Kotake in a big synthesizer. And the dungeon boss, like, the way you fight the boss is... Cadence of Hyrule wants to do puzzle bosses, but it's very difficult to do that, and this is the best version of it. And that's why it's my number 10.
I didn't realize... So, are all the rest of the dungeons, like, the same layout every time?
No.
Okay. They're all randomized to some extent.
They're all randomized, but the Temple of Brainstorms is randomized. I didn't forgot to mention that it's randomized much more like on a grid basis. That's a bad way
to say it. No, I know what you mean.
Because it's puzzles, right? So each room is a usually a puzzle. And the cool thing about these puzzles is there are usually multiple solutions. And so you're thinking, how can I tackle this with what I have? Can I tackle this with what I have? Which is what the randomizer player is always thinking. Cadence of Hyrule does a great job of doing that sort of thing.
That almost makes it sound a lot like LOZ-style dungeons, in a way, if it's grid-based.
Hmm. We don't have time to really get into it.
You're right.
It. That's why it's my number 10. All right.
That means it's my turn to go. Number 10, Hyrule Castle, Breath of the Wild.
Okay.
We talked extensively about how ridiculously cool Hyrule Castle is in Breath of the Wild, about how it's this mega dungeon in a way that very little else in Zelda, like, even approaches. So much that I'm not going to, like, reiterate all of that so much, I guess. I didn't want to put it any higher than 10. It felt like it was not, because Zelda dungeons kind of conform to a certain style, there's like a house style, it felt like I needed it on this list, but I didn't want to put it any higher than 10. Because it's kind of doing a different thing in a lot of ways.
I see what you mean.
I was like, it needs to be up there, but that's as far as it goes.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And that's why it's your number 10.
I said that.
Okay. Then I think we move on to the next number.
Which number is that?
I didn't know if it was day or night. I started dungeon everything in sight. And then I met a monk in the road at Chica Shrine who asked me to tell him about top dungeon number 9.
Okay. So my number 9 dungeon is inside Jabu Jabu's belly from Ocarina of Time.
Okay.
Here's why. It is inside an actual fish. You know, these two are very close because being in a dungeon inside a fish is really cool. But when you're inside Jabu Jabu's belly, it is very much like you feel like you're inside a fish. The walls are disgusting and red and undulating. When you walk in, there's teeth, stuff like that. It's really good for ambiance. And it's it's kind of frustrating at times, which is why it's not higher in my list. But I think it's cool that you're inside of a deity. And it's also cool that you are on a rescue mission to rescue Princess Ruto. And you have, so you have a little interaction with another character and some puzzle solving by throwing a princess, which is fun. Yeah, I think it's fun, even though it's frustrating at times. And it's a unique dungeon. That's why it's my number 9.
All right.
Yeah.
My number 9 is... Or Zach, did you have something to say about that number?
Oh, no, I was just going to say the theming in Jabba Jabba's Dungeon is immaculate. It's it rules.
I like it too. I just didn't have anything else to say. And I want to get to my number 9, which is the Deku Tree and the Forest Temple, and specifically the juxtaposition between them. Because, yeah, I cheated. I just think that, like, if you consider the Deku Tree as the first child Link dungeon and the Forest Temple as the first adult Link dungeon, then the way that they approach being the first dungeon, it, with the Deku Tree being dirt simple and the Forest Temple being a crazy maze, it's just really cool to me. I think that it shows a lot of really smart thinking going into the design of Ocarina of Time. But, like, for the official purposes, for, like, the lifetime rankings, I guess you can call my number 9 just the Deku Tree, but it's actually both the Deku Tree and the Forest Temple.
I'll allow it. I like it. Got some interesting interesting lists going on so far.
And that's why it's my number 9.
I'm not going to do that when it's my turn, for the record. It is my turn. Okay. Number 9. City in the Sky, Twilight Princess. So Twilight Princess has a lot of dungeons, and this is, like, towards the end of your dungeon running life, where the entire game you've been hounded by this, like, weird Escher, like, Cuckoo lady, who's been trying to get somewhere the whole game, her and her child, which is an even creepier looking thing. And through the course of the story, you're, like, trying to find out about some secret civilization nonsense, and you end up finding, like, a straight up cannon that shoots you up to a literal, like, you know, a city suspended in the sky. Because the Zelda team has been wanting to do this for, like, over a decade now, basically, right? First this game, and then Skyward Sword, now Tears of the Kingdom. They really like the idea of putting a city floating in the clouds. I also really like this.
Okay.
It's weird. It's got incredible music that's really just very off-putting. It has, and then, let's see, there's that. There's a dragon boss. There's a Cuckoo guy that just has a shop up there inexplicably. And then the other thing is that a lot of the stuff I put on my list, I have a very good, like, sense memory for, of, like, when I first played it, right? And I've got this very, very, like, positive memory of playing this dungeon the first time, and you're trying to traverse this whole area, and it's, like, really difficult because you don't really have a lot of, like, you don't have a complete set of, like, traversal items in the same way that you, like, it's very tough to get around this entire, like, vertical area, and you know, like, as you're going through, that I must get some other kind of traversal item. And you already have a hookshot, right? You got this, it's a claw shot in that game, but it's a hookshot. So you're like, I don't know what else they would give me, right? You get to the midway through the dungeon, and I get to the mini boss or whatever, and the chest is there, and I'm like, okay, what on earth are they supposed to give me that's supposed to make this easier to traverse? And you open it, and they give you a second claw shot. And I look at that for a second, and I'm just like, does that mean I get to Spider-Man around this dungeon? And yes, you just get to Spider-Man around the dungeon the rest of the time, and it rules. So that's why it's my number 9.
That is a very compelling argument. It does rule.
It's not a popular dungeon, but it's one I think about all the time. That's well, it for 9.
That's it for 9.
8! Oh yes, it's the 8th placing dungeon.
8!
8th placing dungeon.
Number 8. So, is the moon a dungeon? I say yes. Okay. It is a dungeon, and yeah. It's my number 8.
Yeah!
First of all, having a dungeon on the moon is cool. But the cool thing about this area is that it has multiple little dungeons in it, much like a lot of the other final, like, dungeon-y areas in Zelda games.
Sure.
Where you use all the stuff that you've gotten until this point. And beyond that, let's see what else is cool about it. Well, actually, cooler still is the fact that there's all these creepy children running around asking you thought-provoking questions and making you think about the entire game you've played until this point. Not to spoil this podcast too much. but it's just super cool to the sheer number of ways that it, like, makes you revisit the entire game until this point. And, of course, giving up what you've collected along the way. Fortunately, the small, like, dungeon segments that you visit on the moon are kind of dungeon enough for me to call this my number 8.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll do my number 8. What's my number 8? Oh, my number 8 is the Tower of the Gods from Wind Waker. I think that the overworld of Wind Waker is so strong that the dungeons in this game actually take, like, a back seat. The dungeons are not that great overall. But the Tower of the Gods is an awesome set piece that stands out among the dungeons. It's the only place in the game where your boat gets to be part of the dungeon, which I think is essential to a boat game, that you do at least one dungeon where you get to boat around. And it has the cool puzzles with the command melody, and the boss is fine, I guess. And then you ring the bell at the end. Isn't that part so cool?
That is cool, to ring a big bell.
It's like, actually, it feels like part of the plot in a way that Zelda dungeons usually don't.
That's true.
Like if the Forest Temple, for example, were something completely different, it wouldn't affect the plot at all. Like if you put Catfish's Maw in there instead of the Forest Temple, you know what I mean? But Tower of the Gods, you couldn't really do that because it fits into plot in a way that, actually, now that I think about it, is hard to explain, but I still know what I'm talking about. And the fact that the way Wind Waker treats its dungeons is what allows that cool feeling of being part of the plot to happen, because it's part of the plot instead of being part of a, you know, list of challenges. And that's why it's my number 8.
All right.
Good one.
My number 8. Number 8. Divine Beast Va Naboris. The divine beasts in Breath of the Wild are weird. In general, as far as a take on a Zelda dungeon. And a lot of them are, like, fine. But there's only one that's, like, genuinely just a good dungeon. And it's Va Naboris. It's, it has, like, separate sections. It's got a very engaging, like, dungeon manipulation mechanic. It has, like, an actual, like, challenging boss fight compared to the rest of them, which are pretty, like, big snooze fests. Yeah, it's the best. It's It's the best that that team has done on a dungeon. Or that, not that team, but like that, that this, the, in this Breath of the Wild style, right? Mm. And I'm excited. You know, we'll see what they do in the next game, but do more like this. This is a good one. Yeah.
And that's is why it's
I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say it.
All right. Then I guess we'll move on.
Seventh place.
Okay.
You all know the song 7 Days that Bob Dylan recorded in 1976.
No.
I wasn't born then, so no. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. Still enjoyed the jingle, though. Speaking of seventh, my seventh place dungeon is the Water Temple from Ocarina of Time.
Ooh,
this is a. I enjoyed this dungeon quite a bit. It is also a frustrating one, but in the way that it is rewarding once you manage to figure out what the heck is going on. I did play the original version where you have to take on, put on and take off the boots all the time, and it's still in my top 10. So that says a lot about the puzzles in it. That was definitely my favorite part. The fact that you have to learn to navigate this entire space and figure out how the changing water levels affect everything. It's a good way to provide gating for all of the, like, the puzzle flow and the dungeon, like, flow. Having only certain areas accessible until you can change the water level. I thought there were a good number of surprising moments in there, like walking into a room and you're suddenly out on the ocean.
Yeah.
That's a very cool fight with Dark Link, which is also like very surprising and cool. Yeah, I think overall it's very solid, and that's my explanation.
You know, if I were going to rank, like, Zelda bosses, I would forget about Dark Link because he's a mini boss. But in terms of just, like, boss fights in all Zelda games, I think that's way up there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the set of it is very cool. And the psychology of having to fight yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I always think about the Water Temple as this big, extremely like fascinating space where you've got like the central pagoda and then these like outlying chambers and then like an underwater like river. It's like weird.
Yeah, it's eerie. It's unnatural sort of, but cool.
Well, cool. My number seven is the Forsaken Fortress from Wind Waker.
That's a good choice,
which is also cool. Right? Mm-hmm. For one thing, it's cool because you come here as a weakling first, and you have to stealth around, and then you come as a tough guy later on, and you can just barbarian your way through. Also, it feels like an actual fortress. It doesn't feel like a dungeon, a Zelda dungeon. It feels like a space that's being used by moblins and bokoblins to do their job. Which is neat. And also you've got the Helmarok King, who's a good, like, story boss.
Yeah.
And then you have the scene with Ganondorf in his lair, which is amazing. And it's another dungeon that is, like, part of the plot. And again, that's because of Wind Waker's whole dungeon ethos, I think. So I like it.
Forsaken Fortress didn't make my list.
Is it in your honorable mentions?
It did not actually make it into my honorable mentions. But it's the one that didn't make it that for like the past 6 months I've going, do I want to put that back in there? That's definitely one that would. I've been thinking about it. It's on the list underneath the list.
Well, what did get to be your number seven?
My number seven, in contrast to Sarah's number seven, is the Fire Temple.
Ooh.
Ocarina of Time. I love the Fire Temple so much. I love thinking about it. I love thinking about it as this, like, prison complex within, like, two, like, volcanic cones, but also within a volcanic crater. The volcanology here is confusing. You're given, like, a stated goal immediately at the beginning to, like, slay a dragon. You rescue a bunch of Gorons, and you love Gorons. Just the physicality of the place is great because it all fits within these two big chambers. Oh, it's just so good. I love the Fire Temple.
I'm going to have to check that one out again. You make it sound really cool.
That wasn't a very convincing argument. I just think it's really cool.
No, that's very convincing. It's viscerally cool.
Yeah. That's it.
Awesome.
That was number seven for people keeping track at home.
You've got to weigh down every switch. You've got to weigh down every switch. Weigh down that switch until it clicks. Must be the dungeon number six. Must be the dungeon number six. Must be the dungeon number six.
Are you going to give us the references for the jingles?
Zach knows that one.
I definitely know that one.
He just doesn't want to say anything about it.
Uh-huh. I'd be acting shy.
Zach recognizes it from the episode of House where it was featured.
Okay, sure. That's a poll.
Whatever. You guys are young.
I'll start talking about my number six dungeon, which is the Lakebed Temple from Twilight Princess.
Oh!
Another water temple.
Yeah, you've got a pattern going.
A little bit of a theme, yeah.
But tell me about the Lakebed Temple.
This is a very cool water temple because it looks like a water temple. Like, it looks like a temple. It's obviously, it's got very cool architecture and, like, shell motifs and, like, seaweed patterns and stuff. I think the architectural details and the space of it is one of my favorite parts. I feel like I'd like to go walk around in there. And it also feels like weathered and old and abandoned. And it's just a cool place to like fake walk around in. And then of course the central staircase providing so many opportunities for figuring out the layout and the like flow of the puzzles and the like gameplay of the actual dungeon, like what do you call it, like the puzzle flow. The fact that the water flow is involved with the puzzles is always cool, just like the ocean or the water temple from Ocarina of Time. But with this one, for some reason, I don't know, I guess it's the atmosphere that I liked a lot in this one. There's also, I just like the moment at the end where you're like jumping into a pit and then fighting, is it a big eel?
Yeah,
it's a big eel. It's like a cool ending for it. And of course there's like a big water slide you can slide down. So that's neat. I just think it's a cool space. And the puzzles were good.
I think you're right about the architecture. I think that there's like Zora stuff in Twilight Princess, but they don't necessarily have a lot of like buildings. And I think that Breath of the Wild ends up not directly pulling from the Lakebed Temple as some like architectural inspiration, but like there's definitely, they were looking at that. when they were thinking about the architecture they made in Breath of the Wild, which is cool.
That's cool. Yeah, I really like this place. Also, I feel like the armor that you're wearing in there kind of like matches the decor. Like it just looks cool. It just all works.
Cool.
Yeah. What about you, Ryan?
Well, what about me indeed? My Dungeon 6 is Turtle Rock, the Link's Awakening version.
Oh, ho.
Good dungeon.
It's just so complicated and tricky. I was just replaying Link's Awakening on the Switch. Like, yes, I did this dungeon yesterday. And all the other dungeons, when you've done them 50 times, you're like, yeah, this is a good dungeon. I like playing this game. But then Turtle Rock, you're like, yeah, I can handle this. Being good at Link's Awakening means you like can, you have a very chunky feeling of adeptness when you play through Turtle Rock, because it's not holding your hand. So it makes it just a great experience for, you know, to reward skilled play. And it established a trend that we talked about on the Stone Tower episode, of being the biggest, toughest dungeon is the penultimate one, so that the final dungeon can be, you know, more laid back or spooky or whatever, which is, I think, is a really great move that shows a lot of, again, a lot of care and intelligence into the overall design. And I think it's rad. Turtle Rock.
Nice.
How about you, Zach?
For mine, number 6, Bottom of the Well, Ocarina of Time.
Ooh.
Wow.
Bottom of the Well, Ocarina of Time. You could just take, I could just entirely lift that dungeon and run it in the tabletop game Dungeons and Dragons with no alterations, and it would work.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It is this incredibly well thought out space with a bunch of just weirdo side rooms that don't yield anything that you actually need.
Yeah.
I was playing it in a randomizer recently, and like literally it's just like, okay, yeah, you can just go to the end of the dungeon. It's just right there. Like you have to go do one thing in the back. It's super short, but it has all these other cool things in it. And like just such a dungeon aesthetic. Like real world dungeon aesthetic to it, that it's just like, ah, it's fantastic. Love that place.
I was rewatching this one this week, and yeah, it was way cooler than I remembered. It's been a while since I played the game, and I was like, dang, this one's really good.
I will say, I don't think the Shadow Temple competes with the Bottom of the Well.
I'm going to, when we do the Ikana wrap-up episode, I'm going to bug you to explain what your problem with the Shadow Temple is, okay?
Okay, I'm good with that.
All right. All right, let's go on to the next number. Yippee-yi-yay. Yippee-yi-yo. Here's dungeon number 5. Yes.
Okay, number 5. My number 5 dungeon is the Temple of Time from Twilight Princess.
Ooh.
This is a Zelda-themed dungeon. This dungeon is like for Zelda fans. You find this dungeon by walking through a weird door to the past. It is somewhat time related, but it has a lot of other, it's like a mishmash of, it feels to me like all kinds of Zelda stuff put together. There's a lot of familiar enemies, but it actually, I feel like it's one of the more, the stronger, it's a puzzle heavy one. It's like one of the stronger puzzle flows too. I guess that's important to me in my list. Because it's one of those ones where you play halfway through and you get the item, and then suddenly things are, you can do things you couldn't do before. In this case with the, what's it called? The Dominion Rod.
Yeah.
Where you're moving statues around, which is, I didn't expect that, even though it's happened in other games. And so it was really cool. And the fact that you have to use that item in the boss fight to control giant statues with giant hammers and hammer on the boss was fun. Some of the like smaller puzzles in the middle too, with like putting things on scales and placing statues in the right places, I thought they were fun. So this to me is one of the good puzzle temples, puzzle dungeons. And
this is making me want to play Twilight Princess after all the stuff Zach has told me about it.
It's got good dungeons.
I go so back and forth about Twilight Princess because it's a game that I think it's fine, but then I think about a lot of individual things from Twilight Princess and I'm like, man, Twilight Princess has some cool stuff in it.
Yeah.
The opening to the Temple of Time is literally you walk through like the Ocarina Temple of Time, like through like a time portal or whatever, and then you put the Master Sword on the pedestal and a staircase ascends to like the stained glass and you walk through that and now you're in a dungeon. It's sick. It's so...
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, very rewarding for having played all the other games and then getting to this temple.
Yeah.
Cool.
Maybe I should replay Twilight Princess.
My dungeon 5 is Stone Tower Temple from Majora's Mask.
I know that one.
When we talked about it recently, we talked about how it like adds together all the themes of the game, which other final dungeons do. But I think the way Stone Tower Temple does it is tops. Like, if you consider that versus, like, Ganon's Tower in Ocarina of Time, maybe that's not a fair comparison, but the way Stone Tower Temple is doing the all the stuff thing is way cooler.
But as a cohesive piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, we talked about it enough, so we can move on to Zach's number 5.
Number 5. Catfish's Maw, Link's Awakening.
Whoa.
Is this the first repeat?
Is this only the first repeat we've done? Oh, we're really good at this.
That's amazing.
We're really good at this.
That's amazing.
So Catfish's Maw, it's as established on several previous podcasts, we love this dungeon. We love our friend Master Stalfos.
Yeah.
I think I'll just talk about real quick just how its place in like the progress of the game, where the four preceding dungeons all have like a like something to point you in that direction, some kind of like task or mini dungeon or something that gets you the key that gets you in there. Like, there's a very solid structure, and then you get to the Catfish's Maw segment and the game kind of lays off the gas for a little bit and lets you kind of just get to the dungeon when you're ready to get to that dungeon. And there's like a task you have to do, but it's not like relevant to getting to that dungeon. That dungeon's just there.
Yeah.
And it gives you this breathing room from like a pacing perspective that...
Oh my gosh, Zach.
...is fantastic.
You're Love so it. Smart. It's... Yes.
Yeah. Is that it for number 5s?
I think that's it for number 5.
4! What is it good for?
My number 4 is Turtle Rock from Link's Awakening.
Yeah!
Another repeat. I think it's cool that this is the only dungeon... I could be wrong. I haven't played all the games. This is the only dungeon I can remember that you have to fight before you can enter it. I should have fact checked this.
You could make arguments for the Divine Beast, but that's not really the same thing.
Oh yeah,
no,
that's not the same thing at all.
It's
no,
cool though.
I disagree. If you phrase it as that you have to fight before you enter it, then at least one of the Divine Beasts does qualify. But I mean, it's a very good point anyway.
I should really play that game.
The fight against Turtle Rock is not the same as the fights against the Divine Beasts. And agreed. It's a very good.
Agreed.
Yeah. And it was the first of its kind.
Hmm.
Also, the fact that it has a lot of other unique qualities, like you can go outside of it from the inside.
That's so good.
You're still inside of it.
Oh, I forgot all about that.
Yeah. It has, yeah, that's cool. And I remember playing this when I was younger and having no idea where any of the pathways went
from that one
central room. And yeah, there's so many, it's like a maze. And then learning like that mastery of that room with all the directions you can go and like actually ending up where you want to go. Such a good feeling. Plus, yes. The magic rod is cool as a dungeon item.
That's very good.
Yeah, I think it has a lot of good qualities. That's why it's my number four dungeon.
Well, my number four dungeon is Catfish's Maw from Link's Awakening.
All right. We're all starting to get into sync.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mostly because of Master Salphos, who's my spirit animal. Also because of, like, the chaos to the layout and the progression. In a similar way to Turtle Rock that is, like, not holding your hand. Catfish's Maw is, like, you're just going to go all over the place because the dungeon isn't here to make sense for you. You've invaded this weird like space that really, if you're adventuring like a guy on an adventure, you shouldn't expect to enter a space that is ready to receive your adventuring and will always give you the compass before it gives you the map, before it gives you the boss key, which is not what Catfish's Maw actually does necessarily, but it's, laid out in a disorderly way that makes it feel really organic in a way that is difficult to do in a 2D Zelda, but Catfish's Maw does it. And then in the Switch version, when it gets that extra layer of presentation and it feels like a grotto at the bottom of a lake, that's really cool. Pay attention next time you play it to the way tiles are laid out and to where there is water or floor tiles or sand. It's really rewardingly designed, and that's why it's my number four.
I had a feeling this one would come up again.
Will it? Oh, okay. Where are we at? Number four. Stone Tower Temple, Majora's Mask.
Yeah.
I talked a lot about this dungeon very recently. It's very good.
I was sure it was going to be your number one.
No. It was the impetus for coming up with this idea, but on careful examination, I found three dungeons I liked more. Yeah, I don't know. There's not much else to say about it. It meshes all its parts extremely well. It doesn't overstay its welcome. It's got some incredible bosses to fight.
We love Stone Tower Temple. Okay.
It has the best music. I've said that many times.
We haven't talked much about the music in these dungeons.
Music is a major factor for my selection of dungeons.
Yeah. There's
really...
We'll get to some more.
Okay. All right. Let's move along then.
I finally died and started the whole dungeon over. But I couldn't see that the dungeon was three.
Well, we've already talked about this one enough, I think. My number three dungeon is Stone Tower Temple.
Whoa!
Yeah!
I don't think I had anything new to say. But yeah, the music is very cool. I like that there's two different kinds of music. I don't know if that's usually a thing. I can't think of another dungeon
that has
two different sets of music. So yeah, all the things we've already said and cool music.
All right.
Yeah.
Dungeon number three for me is the Oceanside Spider House and also the Swamp Spider House. Cause I'm not going to put two different spider houses in two different places. I only have 10 top tens. And I prefer the Oceanside. Like again, if you can only count one because only one will fit into your spreadsheet, then it's Oceanside Spider House. I love how they're perpendicular to the rest of the game. I love how small they are and how they're so creepy. And all the very subtle world building that we've talked about a lot on the podcast. You feel like you're really exploring a place. And that's cool. I love the spider houses.
They're real good. So, number three, Turtle Rock, Link's Awakening. Everybody is shocked and awed by this. No, it's great. We talked about it a little bit on the Cohen podcast, but like it is a dungeon of the lineage of like maximalist end dungeons, along with like
level nine
LOZ or Ganon's Tower, Link to the Past, which is one that is on my 11 through 15 list, as well as Ancient Tomb, Oracle of Ages, which is also my 11 through 15.
Ancient Tomb.
Those are both ones that didn't make the top 10, but are ones I think about in terms of like.
I never thought about Ancient Tomb that way. Yeah,
I think about Ancient Tomb sometimes. it's a dungeon that has everything that the game did and throws it all at you. Specifically, Turtle Rock does the LOZ thing of having all the like a bunch of mid bosses all over the dungeon that you just have to fight every time you walk through the room. And then they introduce their own mid boss who rules. Blano is so cool.
I like Blano.
You have to fight this boxing guy. It's like, how do we get more leverage out of our sword mechanic, which is kind of barely there? And they came up with a cool boss fight.
Yeah, because I've mentioned a couple times when in the 3D Zeldas, bosses who stick out to me as being like a sword guy. And Blano actually does fill that role of engaging your swordsmanship.
It's a one-on-one duel in a way.
Yeah.
That you're just kind of, it's you and your tools versus him and his tools. And like, it's fun. It's great.
It's rad.
Good dungeon.
Yeah.
Okay, we're getting to some of the very best dungeons. And before we can get to the number ones, we have to do a certain set.
I bet you're wondering how I knew about your pick for Dungeon 2.
My pick for Dungeon 2 is the Forest Temple from Ocarina of Time.
Whoa.
It's such a good dungeon. It's like an iconic dungeon. It was... I for some reason, I remembered it being the first dungeon from Ocarina of Time. But I guess that's because it's the first adult dungeon. But it's so weird how, well, first of all, it doesn't feel like a forest temple. It feels more like a haunted castle, which is awesome. But it has like a forest around it, which is also awesome. I like how it has outdoor rooms and indoor rooms. The music is perfect. And then there's all the, like, they threw in all these strange things, like there's like a chessboard room and there's the twisted corridors that you have to spin in order to get to certain things on the wall, I think, maybe the ceiling. So in that way it's a little bit like the stone tower temple, but like the early prototype sort of,
I guess,
of that like spinning mechanic.
I would not have guessed that Forest Temple would end up on any of our top tens. But, like...
It's on yours.
Never mind. Kind of. Just like, I think that on its own merits, it has trouble sticking out against some others. But when you put it that way, it is really unique and, like, really important to the structure of Ocarina of Time.
Yeah, and I honestly, like, I think when I started making a list, I had my 10, and it was at, like, number 8. And then as I started shuffling things around, I was like, wait, this is actually really cool. Like, it's actually, like, really memorable for me, and it kind of feels, like, experimental in a way. Like, it has so many different weird elements in there. Like, and, of course, the ghosts, the Poe sisters that you, like, I just... I wouldn't have expected that in this game. And then the boss fight with Ganon, the Phantom Ganon coming out of the portraits in this like roped off art gallery or something.
That's so weird.
It's like really unsettling in a cool way. It's, yeah, the whole like design of it is very cool and unexpected. So it made its way all the way up to number two for me.
That's nice. Surprising, and it's wrinkling my brain with a new appreciation of the Forest Temple.
I was surprised too.
My number two temple, Hyrule Castle, Breath of the Wild.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the other way that goes.
Right? there's no other dungeon in Zelda where you can just like hang out, read some books, take a nap. Even more than Forsaken Fortress, it feels like a real place that you're at. And the promise of Breath of the Wild, that like you can just climb all over anything, you can approach things however the heck you want, that's what this dungeon brings in the most dramatic, scariest way. And the way they designed the game is the gating mechanism for when can you go to the final dungeon is your dread of how scary this dungeon is. You can, as we all know now, you can just go straight there. But the first time you pick up the game, that's unthinkable because it's the final dungeon over there. There's a giant demon. And that's amazing. It's similar to Tunic in that way, that it's like you can do it. All you have to do is believe in yourself, and that's how you get to the thing. That's not really what happens in Tunic, but people who played Tunic know what I'm talking about. And that's why it's my number two.
Yeah. All right. Number two. Forest Temple, Ocarina of Time.
Whoa!
Wow.
Which is not as... Ryan is surprised. I'm not surprised. If you had, just asked me straight up to make a snap decision on this before I made this list 6 months ago, there's a good chance I would have just said Forest Temple. It's incredible. For all the reasons we've talked about how it's the dungeon... It marks a paradigm shift in the way Ocarina of Time does its dungeons. Like, you go from the kid dungeons that are, like, missing dungeon keys.
Yeah.
Right? And then you get to the Forest Temple, and it's like, oh, no, you're back in a regular Zelda dungeon now. The keys are back. All the big key is back. All the components are here again.
That's what felt like the first one.
Yeah, you've grown up now. Now you're in a real dungeon, and you got to deal with that. The way that it, like... it marks like, what's the word I want to say? It's like the parentheses around the entire like back half of the game, in that you fight Phantom Ganon, who is there to teach you how you will beat the final boss, Ganon.
That's good.
Yeah.
And the music is perfect. Sarah's completely right about this.
I was just listening to it today. Because I wanted to.
It's extremely good. It's extremely good.
Wow. Gosh. I didn't realize that. I guess I put it with Deku Tree at 9 because I knew that like voting for 2 in a single place would get me in trouble.
Deku Tree is actually in my bottom 11 through 15. So I agree with you what you said there.
You know what? None of us have listed any of the things in my honorable mentions yet.
I've listed most of mine, I think.
I mean that like none of my honorable mentions are in either of your top 10 through 2.
That's fascinating.
We still got 2 more.
Yep. We're going to find out. Before we go on, I want to try and like guess what your number one dungeons are. And I can't.
I can make a prediction.
I've been writing up the... you know what mine is, but...
Do I? What haven't you chosen? Let me look.
Are you typing them down? Are you keeping a record?
No, I actually don't know what your top one is. But I think I think there's a real chance that Sarah and I have the same top one.
Really?
Oh my gosh.
Maybe.
Okay. Well,
I'm not sure about that. We'll see.
Okay. Well, I'm filled with trepidation somehow, even though it's just a stupid list. But let's move on. Because maybe this song should be the dungeon's main theme. And after all, it's my one.
Everyone's getting nervous.
I'm nervous here. Okay. My favorite, this is very easy for me. My favorite Zelda dungeon is Eagle's Tower from Link's Awakening.
Ooh. Good choice.
This, to me, playing it when I was young, it was awesome. It was so good. The fact that you have to collapse the actual dungeon by hitting pillars and dropping one floor onto the next floor down. I mean, kid me was like, oh my God, how did I do that? Like, they did this. It was, so for that reason, it's big on nostalgia for me. And it just has like all these weird creatures in it. It has the Kirbys that you fight in it, which as a kid, it kind of made more sense. Now it's very strange, and it has those three of a kind enemies, and maybe that's pretty much it. But I always thought those were so strange and like out of place in a dungeon, especially after the ones you've already done in Link's Awakening by this point. The fact that it's kind of like, there's for the final the boss fight, it's like a side scrolling or like a horizontal view of the boss fight was like really cool to me as a kid. That is a really hard boss fight though.
Yeah.
I struggled with that.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, the fact that you actually transform the dungeon, that's like one of my favorite things about Zelda dungeons. A lot of the other ones on my list I think are kind of similar, where you have to like picture the entire dungeon and then picture the changes you're making. That's always really cool to me. It's like a big puzzle box.
And yet, wait. Mm-hmm. You didn't play Breath of the Wild. Sorry.
Well, what were you going to say?
Well, that's how all the divine beasts are, ostensibly, is that they're all, you manipulate the dungeon, but like, they don't all come off as good as some of the others.
I'm going to enjoy that game someday.
Yeah. It's a really long game is the problem.
Yeah, I think that's why I've put it off so long.
Eagle's Tower... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
It's all nostalgia for me, I think. I do remember playing Link's Awakening the first time and being slightly let down by the final dungeon because I loved Eagle's Tower so much.
Oh.
So that's how much I love Eagle's Tower.
I want to say this about Turtle Rock, because I don't know if I'll get another chance, that I got stuck there, and like that ended my Link's Awakening experience for a long time, that I just thought I had soft-locked myself in Turtle Rock, because I didn't know about one of the bombable walls.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I actually got stuck in that dungeon, too, because I think it's the first time in the game you have to throw a bomb. And I forgot you could throw bombs. And yeah, you have to like throw a bomb off a ledge to
beat the zombies. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I had no idea what to do and got really stuck.
It's a mean dungeon.
Yeah.
And yet we all love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But enough about Eagle's Tower. It's time for my number one dungeon. Zach, do you know what it is?
I don't. Okay. I haven't been keeping track of things you haven't said,
though. Bottom of the well, Ocarina of Time.
Oh, okay. We are in a total agreement here.
Kind of. My notes say that my personal philosophy is very small, simple things have a greater chance of achieving perfection. And Bottom of the Well is a perfect dungeon, because it's so small that it, like, every detail adds to the whole. There's nothing extraneous about bottom of the well. And that includes the parts that are extra to progression. All the side rooms are adding to that feeling of not being a dungeon that's here for you to overcome, but a creepy space that you are invading. You are, it is not here for you. It is here to be whatever bottom of the well is. That's what makes it creepy, because it's foreign and nasty. I feel like after you were describing bottom of the well, I had more to say about it. Again, it's parallel to the normal progression. It's not a normal dungeon, and that's what makes it such a good dungeon. It's my fave. It's my number one. Hey, this is Ryan, exercising my prerogative as editor to add something that I forgot to mention during the recording, which is most dungeon items are just keys for locks where you can't interact with an obstacle until you find its matching item, and then you can. But Bottom of the Well understands that the lens of truth will change your entire experience of the dungeon, and it does so to outstanding effect, and that's why it's my number one.
It's a real good one.
Good
choice.
It's a real good one. It was too creepy for me, for my list, so. It's off of the top 10.
All right, then. So, my number one favorite Zelda dungeon, Snowpeak Ruins Twilight Princess. Pause for shock.
I am surprised.
This dungeon rules. It's so the back half of Twilight Princess, for Ryan's sake, you finish the first three dungeons are just doing kind of more staples of like Zelda dungeons previous, but like with some, you know, tweaks here. The back half sends you off on a new quest for some MacGuffins, and you kind of start going to places that you'd like, they're a little more out there. And so I forget the premise, but you're supposed to track down a Yeti. And so you spend all this time in this like snowy area, and you track down this Yeti, and it turns out it's not a Yeti that you're supposed to fight. It's just a guy. And he's just like, oh, hey, what's up, man? You should come by my house. I'm making some soup. And so you do a snowboard minigame because it's 2007. And then you get to this mansion that's like perched above a giant like edge of the map Breath of the Wild chasm. No explanation given for it. And you go in there, and it's infested with monsters. But the Yeti doesn't care because the Yeti's bigger than the monsters. And so you show up, and you start talking to this Yeti inside of his house, which is this dungeon. And he's like, my wife is sick, and I want to make her soup to make her feel better. But my soup, it's not so good right now. So I need you to run around my house, this mansion, this dungeon, and collect ingredients to put in this soup. And so you do that, and you go off in different directions and face a bunch of different obstacles and, like, ice block pushing puzzles. And you keep bringing back items, and the soup's just in a giant pot there, and you can just dip your bottle into it and just have soup. But every time you bring an ingredient, it heals more and more hearts.
Cool.
Eventually you go through a whole bunch of stuff, and the soup is ready, and you go and you find out that the wife is possessed by the evil MacGuffin. You fight her, and it's all good. They do the thing at the end of the dungeon where they kiss and a heart comes out, and that's your heart container for the dungeon. It's just cool because it's this clearly like built for human sized people place that was long ago abandoned. It's infested with monsters, but the Yeti doesn't care because the Yeti's bigger than the monsters. The other thing that I love about this dungeon is another sense memory thing of playing Twilight Princess the first time. And because, like, it tried to do weird things with some of the dungeon items, it started to become kind of unpredictable as to what the game's going to give you. And at one point you make your way to the very back of the dungeon, and there's a ball and chain trooper shows up. And you have to do a cool sword fight with this ball and chain guy, like classic, you know, 2D Zelda enemy. And you beat him, and there's like a beat. There's like a momentary pause where a chest should show up.
Mm-hmm.
and then that would be the chest that you open to get the dungeon item. And that doesn't happen with, like, this conspicuous pause. And the camera just kind of pans over, or, like, Link's eyes pan over and look at the ground where that ball and chain just fell to the ground.
All right, all right.
And Link's just like, I guess that's my dungeon item. And you just pick it up, and then the rest of the game you have one of those balls and chain.
Rad.
And you use that to break ice, and you use that to put it in cannons to shoot. No, that's what it is. You put it inside of a cannon, and you shoot out of the cannon, and that's, like, your mechanism for the rest of the puzzles in the dungeon. And that always just tickled me pink. I love it. It's great. Number one dungeon.
You just sold me on this dungeon.
I think about the Yeti's house all the time. It's just his house. He just moved in. Yeah. It's just like, I don't care about these, like, icicle-throwing guys that are miserable to fight, because I'm bigger than them. Whatever.
Wow.
That's it.
Okay, so we're done.
Not yet.
What is this?
Sarah had a number zero, and I don't know exactly what her number zero is, but I also have a number zero.
Okay, oh, yeah. Well, wait, I have a jingle for number zero. That I had to compose while you were talking, because you didn't tell me there was going to be a number zero. There it is. Let's all get up and rank a dungeon that didn't fit between dungeons 10 and 1. A number invented a long, long time ago. The number zero. The number zero. Sing it again. Okay, what's your number zero?
My number zero is the Dream Shrine from Link's Awakening.
Oh, snap!
That's a key choice.
It is really one of my favorite things about any Zelda game, but it's also only 1 minute long, so I don't think it necessarily counts as a dungeon.
That's perfect.
But it feels like zero is a good number for it. It's very eerie. Out of time.
The Dream Shrine is such a cool, evocative place, and I remember as a kid, like, banging my head against it, not realizing that I just needed to progress the story more to get the proper item.
Hmm.
Because you run into those crystals and it's like, I don't understand what these things are. Brian, do you want to invent a number zero real quick?
I was busy writing a song.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll just say my number zero.
That counts.
Okay, number zero. Palace Eclair from The Frog for Whom the Bell Tolls. Which is not really a Zelda dungeon at all. It's kind of more of a Castlevania.
I mean, it's not the word I would use, but okay.
it's a big side-scroll castle in a game that's not even really a Zelda game. But I tried to go, like, think about other Zelda games that have dungeons, and I was wondering if I could throw a swerve in and, like, pull something from, like, I don't know, Newtopia or something. But, like, none of those dungeons are as good as Zelda dungeons, sorry to say. All right, we did it. Those are the definitive rankings.
Yeah.
You cannot argue with us about them.
Now, just to save some people some time, the four dungeons that we all had on our lists are Catfish's Maw, Turtle Rock LA, Stone Tower Temple, Forest Temple. So put that in your pipe and digest it. Your meal pipe.
So those are the four best dungeons?
Yes. Not necessarily in that order.
We'll have to run the math.
Thank you for enjoying the top 10 dungeons. We'll be back next week with whatever.